And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're obviously going to be catching up on news and all of that, but our deep dive is going to be, can a U.S. president declassify anything they want? And with everything swirling around, with Mar-a-Lago and the warrant being served on former President Trump and him claiming, oh, I just declassified everything, we're going to dive into this because I did my homework. I did the research. I'm going to give you the statutes. I'm going to tell you exactly what a president can and cannot declassify and what options they have. So stick around for that. It's going to be great. And as always, let's start with the news. And in aging news, you're getting old, and it's all your screen's fault. Now, I found this to be really interesting. I think we're all a little bit guilty of this, myself included, because I'm also getting old, and it's all my screen fault as well. Now, here's what's going on. This is coming from Study Finds. I thought this was absolutely just interesting. Here's what's up. Too much blue light from gadgets like televisions, laptops, and smartphones can accelerate the aging process, according to a new study. Now, researchers found that the light could also lead to the onset of obesity and also psychological problems as well. Dr. Jadwiga Leblutschwitz, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrect. They are a professor at the Department of Integrative Biology at Oregon State, and I quote the doctor, excessive exposure to blue light from everyday devices such as televisions, laptops, and phones may have detrimental effects on a wide range of cells in our body, from skin and fat cells to sensory neurons. We are the first to show that levels of specific metabolites, chemicals that are essential for cells to function correctly, are altered in fruit flies exposed to blue light, end quote. Now, the research team experimented with fruit flies and discovered that the light from screens affected them as well. This is significant since human and flies, interestingly enough, have similarities on a cellular level. If you've ever seen Jeff Goldblum's The Fly, you know it's true. Now, the team also found that the cells in fruit flies don't function at an optimal level after exposure to blue light, which they suggest could lead to premature death. That's awesome. Now, through an examination of the cells in the flies' brains, they discovered that levels of one metabolite, succinate, increased while glutamate levels dropped. And to quote the doctor again, because you know I don't know this, and I quote, succinate is essential for producing the fuel for the function and growth of each cell. High levels of succinate after exposure to blue light can be compared to gas being in the pump but not getting into the car. Another troubling discovery was that molecules responsible for communication between neurons, such as glutamate, are at a lower level after blue light exposure. Now, low levels of glutamate could result in a decrease in brain function, possibly causing premature aging, according to the study. This is probably why I forget everything. Now, in the world we live in, obviously blue light is flipping everywhere, and it's active all hours of the day. And to quote the doctor again, LEDs have become the main illumination in display screens such as phones, desktops, and TVs, as well as ambient lighting. So humans in advanced societies are exposed to blue light through LED lighting during most of their waking hours. Our study suggests that avoidance of excessive blue light exposure may be a good anti-aging strategy. And so with that, there's not many tips, for this, but here are the tips that I could find for blocking blue light. And for the record, I just have to say, if you are as old as me, you might remember the commercials in the 1980s, or maybe it was the 1990s, for blue blocker sunglasses. I never thought they looked good, but this was what they were talking about back in the 80s. So obviously, those things were prophetic. So the first tip is, obviously, you can find glasses that block blue light. Go get yourself some blue blockers. Also, you can get glasses that have those kinds of tints. I know gamer glasses, I believe, have like yellow tint that blocks blue, so you can, it's basically easier on your eyes to watch screens, which is the other thing that you can do. Blue light filters or nighttime filters on phones and computer screens can also help. So I sit in front of my computers and my phone all day. I have those things running 24/7. Basically, it kind of warms the colors, deadens the blue, but I can still see everything. I can, watch what I need to watch. I can write, emails, et cetera, browse the web, and I am protecting my eyes with that. And it's interesting because then when I'm in front of a phone, for example, that doesn't have that blue light filter on, it looks vastly different. And just given how much I travel, given how much I'm on devices, that's how I protect my eyes. So make sure that you're doing that, because the last thing you want to do is be obese and forgetful and old because of blue light. And that seems to be what this article is saying. So now you know how to protect yourself. Go get yourself some blue blockers. Should have invested in them like 20, 30 years ago. And in artificial intelligence news, I hate to say this, but the AI says that you're fired and welcome to the future. Here's what's going on. It's coming from the New York Post, and this is alarming. Honestly, I could do a deep dive on this one. I probably will in the future now that I'm thinking about it, but here's what's going on. Facebook is the latest large tech company to begin mass layoffs, choosing 60 contractors reportedly at random using an AI to make the decision for them. According to Business Insider, workers were informed via a video conference call that they would have no more work as of September 2nd. So obviously we've passed that like a couple weeks ago or a week ago, with their pay ending on October 3rd. No specific reasons were given beyond being chosen at random. Now, the layoffs are perhaps not surprising, considering that during a company-wide Q&A meeting in late June, Mark Zuckerberg himself warned that employees at a recent market slump, quote, might be one of the worst downturns that we've seen in recent history, prompting the need for, quote, aggressive performance reviews, end quote, to help weed out underperforming employees. Obviously, I'm not a fan of Facebook. I make no bones about that whatsoever. But using an artificial intelligence, I think, I think the guy lacks emotional empathy. I think he's non-empathetic person. Because could you imagine? I mean, you're popping in metrics into an artificial intelligence. It's rating against everything else, but there are so many things that artificial intelligence cannot pick up on. Nuance, you know, ties, like the cohesion that maybe a person that doesn't perform as well as another person, but that person brings cohesion to the team. There's so many different things. So getting fired by an artificial intelligence is seriously, seriously not cool. But I think it's coming. We've seen AIs make choices in hiring, so it would make sense that we would see choices in firing. And I think I might do a deep dive on this one because it's crazy. If you'd want to hear a deep dive, send me a message, let me know. But I'm thinking about it for the next episode or three, one of those. So there you go. But that is unfortunately, your AI news of the week. And in Apple news, and this one's actually interesting because Apple could be the newest privacy nightmare, and we're now just learning about this. This is actually coming from CNBC, and you don't think about Apple in this way. They've got excellent marketing, but here's what's going on, again, coming from CNBC, because according to a study published about a week ago Tuesday or so by AppSumer, Apple is gaining momentum in digital ads while Google and Facebook appear to be losing steam. Now, this research was based on analysis of the online ad budgets for over 100 different consumer app companies and found that Apple's ad business has benefited from the company's major iOS privacy update in 2021, which made it more difficult for companies like Facebook to track users across the internet. iOS, for the record, is the operating system that runs the iPhone and the iPad. So if you have an iPhone, you have iOS. That is the platform that it runs. They had a huge update in 2021, really ticked off Facebook, and here we are. Now, Apple's search ads let people advertise on the iPhone maker's App Store. Advertiser adoption rate for the second quarter rose almost 4 points from a year earlier to 94.8%, while Facebook's adoption fell 3 points to 82.8%, according to AppSumer. Google's rate also declined by 2 points to 94.8, meaning these groups are basically trying to integrate all of these for different advertising platforms, and Apple is rising while Facebook and Google are lowering. Now, Apple, quote, has joined the duopoly of Facebook and Google at the top table of advertiser adoption, according to AppSumer. Now, a general manager of AppSumer, Shmuel Lace, attributed Apple's improved standing to an increase in the number of app developers willing to pay big money to bolster downloads. At the same time, Apple's App Tracking Transparency Update, or ATT, has limited the amount of data that ad-based apps like Facebook can use to help brands with their online ad campaigns. So, in terms of overall app developer spend on online advertising, referred to basically as a share of the wallet, Google is still the largest at 34%, Facebook's at 28%, but Apple is now at 15%, which is a large jump. And so I think, and this is my own opinion outside of CNBC, that a case could be made that Apple is intentionally making it harder, or has made it harder for their competitors like Facebook to advertise on their platforms in order to increase their own share, or maybe even try to corner the market basically for the iPhone. And this news also comes, for the record, as iPhones are now the most dominant phone in the U.S. market. But kind of. According to Counterpoint Research data via the Financial Times, they are suggesting that Apple has attained its highest ever market share of the smartphone space in the United States in June of this year. Now, based on the active install base, a statistic accounting for all smartphones in use today, iPhones account for 50% of all active phones in the United States, which basically is the number one competitor, because there are about 150 other devices that make up the rest of the user base. So Samsung has various models, but you either have an Apple or you have an Android. And only one company makes Apple, which is Apple products. They're the only ones that make iPhone, but Android is made by Samsung and Huawei and LG and, you know, take your pick. Every other platform, Motorola, they're all using Android. And so what makes that interesting is that now we've got iPhones clearly being incredibly dominant. You've got Apple clearly cornering or attempting to corner or at least raise their shares by making it harder for their competitors to compete on their platforms. And so I think if they keep rising in market share, what we may actually see are lawsuits going on. I mean, think about this. Facebook was absolutely ticked off in 2021 when this privacy change or this privacy update came out, to the point where they had actually integrated into Facebook like a pop-up for iPhone users initially, where it said, hey, if you basically are now opting out of our tracking, we may actually have to start charging users for Facebook use. That is a huge shift, because obviously they've always made their money by data mining the bejesus out of you and then selling it to advertisers. But if you're opting out to tracking, if Facebook can't see, let's say, the habits that you're doing on what you're buying, it makes it much harder for them to turn around and tell advertisers, yes, we can 100% guarantee or almost guarantee that the people that are going to see your ad are people that would be interested in your product. That's what we're talking about here. And if Apple is cornering that market on the iPhone, which is now the largest, basically, platform, literally 50% of all active phones in the United States, and, you know, and obviously Android blows them away in the world, but iPhone is huge, we are looking at a massive, massive, massive Apple win here. And the other thing to think about too here is that in order to be excellent at advertising, like basically targeted advertising, meaning my company would want to buy your targeted advertising, you have to be really good at getting me to my target audience. Otherwise, why am I paying? So think about that. But that is your Apple news of the week. We'll see where this goes. And in mobile privacy news, if you didn't know, most mobile carriers here in the United States are keeping your geolocation data for over 2 years. And you can't opt out. Now, here's what's going on. This is coming from CyberScoop, and I thought this was really interesting. 10 of the top 15 mobile carriers collect geolocation data and provide no way for you, the consumer, to opt out, according to information from the telecom companies that the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, published about 2 weeks ago or so. Now, the carrier's answers to questions about data collection and retention from the FCC come in response to a July request from the agency seeking information on geolocation practices in the light of concerns of how law enforcement could use phone data to arrest people like abortion seekers in states where the procedure is now illegal or soon will be outlawed. So, for example, Texas, that is obviously very restrictive. You know, if you're a woman leaving Texas to go to, I don't know, California or nearby state, now the location data can basically, from the carrier, can basically show the state of Texas if they suspect you've had an abortion, which is a crime in that state, that you've gone out of state to do something what they deem as illegal. That's what we're talking about here. Not to mention, you know, just geofence warrants and all that kind of stuff. But I digress, because AT&T, Best Buy Health, Charter, Comcast, Consumer Cellular, C Spire, Dish Network, Google Fi, H2O Wireless, Lycra Mobile, Mint Mobile, Red Pocket, T-Mobile, US Cellular, and Verizon all responded to the FCC inquiry. And according to FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosen-Worsell, and I quote, "Our mobile phones know a lot about us. That means carriers know who we are, who we call, and where we are at any given moment. This information and geolocation data is really sensitive. It's a record of where we've been and who we are. That's why the FCC is taking steps to ensure this data is protected," end quote. I think she's 100% right there. Now, in their responses, the companies generally cited the need to comply with law enforcement requests as well as FCC rules as their reason for being unable to allow consumers to opt out of collection and retention, meaning you can't go to the Verizons of the world and say, yes, don't collect my data at all. Now, the responses provided a window into data retention practices, which ranged from 2 months to 5 years for cellular tower data for the responding companies. Only 7 of the companies explicitly mentioned protecting that data with encryption. That is nuts. I hope the other, you know, 7 or 8 are actually doing it and just didn't say they are. Now, geolocation data obviously offers a detailed window into the life of the person, including everything from where they shop to what medical providers they seek out, meaning you're going to that Planned Parenthood across the state and boom, there you go. Now, the agency isn't relying on the carrier's responses, though. Chairwoman Rosen Warsell tasked the agency's enforcement bureau with a follow-up investigation into making sure that carriers are actually following FCC rules that require them to disclose how they are using and sharing geolocation data. And this is not a new problem. If you remember the podcast, the super popular podcast, I don't know, 5+ years ago, called Serial, about that guy named Adnan Syed, I believe his name was, when he was like a senior in high school and he was accused of killing his girlfriend in high school, and it was this huge trial. He claims innocence even to this day. He was convicted in part because they were able to pull cellular records, text messages, cell tower data, all this kind of stuff, and try to pinpoint where his mobile phone was at the time. And that was 1999. And we really haven't improved that much when it comes to the privacy and security of these things. So there you go. We're going to see where this goes, but understand that, you know, you have a mobile phone. You might be listening to me on that mobile phone if you're streaming your radio station through one of the apps, or you're listening to this on my SoundCloud account when it comes out. And understand that phone is always with you. You are constantly being tracked, as am I, as is everybody else. So there you go. That is your privacy news of the day. You can't say you haven't been told that at least your cell phone company knows exactly where you are at pretty much all times. And in Facebook being awful to you, this is what the news we're talking about today, Facebook and Instagram, because their web browser is stealing your credit card information, and it's also tracking everything else you do online, so that's great. Now, here's what's going on. This is coming from the Daily Star, and I think this is important, all you Facebook and Instagram users, because Facebook and Instagram are reportedly, quote, rewriting websites, end quote, visited by their users so they can follow them around the internet. Now, a research team from ex-Google, basically from an ex-Google engineer, claims that the social networks inject other websites with a tracking code, basically whenever a link is opened through the in-app browser. So if you've ever used Facebook, for example, and, you know, one of your friends has posted a link to, you know, I don't know, an article in the Wall Street Journal, whatever it is, you tap on the link, you'll note it doesn't actually go into your browser like Chrome or Safari. It keeps you within the Facebook ecosystem. That is the in-app browser. So what this means is that Facebook and Instagram can monitor everything from your internet history to, quote, your passwords, addresses, and credit card numbers. Now, Meta, the parent of Facebook, responded to these claims saying that the tracking code following users' privacy preferences and that the data gathered is only aggregated for use in targeted advertising. However, the privacy researcher Felix Krauss said, quote, the Instagram app injects their tracking code into every website shown, including when clicking on ads, enabling them to monitor all user interactions like every button and link tapped, text selections, screenshots as well, as well as any form inputs like passwords, addresses, and credit card numbers. Meaning, you see that field, you're going to buy that cool thing, or like, hey, I want a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, and you punch in all that information in the in-app browser, they can grab and record all of that information. In a statement, Meta, the parent of Facebook, responded to these claims saying, quote, we intentionally developed this code to honor people's tracking choices on our platforms. And, well, thank you for honoring my choice, but stop monitoring my choice. And I totally screwed that up, but you know where I was going with that. My God. So anyway, don't use the in-app browser. If you need to buy something, or let's say a friend links something and you really want to see it, basically you can go into the in-app browser and say open in Chrome or Safari or Brave or whatever app browser your standard browser is. Get out of the Facebook ecosystem as best you can, or you can just remove Facebook and Instagram from your phone. I'd be cool with that too. But that is your Facebook and Instagram tracking news of the week. And in romance news, because, oh yeah, we're getting funky with romance here on the Deep Dive Radio Show, not just cybersecurity. we're going to be talking about internet dating real quick. This is a new segment, not a deep dive, although honestly, this could also be a deep dive as well. So I think this is an interesting one, and I think we may see a changing face in privacy here, but we also have a changing face of romance and human interaction as well. This is coming from the New York Post, and I found this to be really interesting because most Americans believe young adults today face more challenges than their parents' generation, particularly when it comes to things like saving for the future, paying for college, buying a home, finding a spouse is one of those things, and that's according to Pew Research. Now, a deluge of dating app options is not helping either. A new study found that Americans are more than twice as likely to say that younger adults today have it harder than their parents' generation, 46%, when trying to find a spouse, compared to those who say they have it easier, which is 21%. Around a third, 32%, say the chances are about the same. Now, Dr. Jen Gonsalius, a sociologist, intimacy speaker, and author, told the Post that the aforementioned factors Pew Research found to be more difficult for young adults today are, quote, all things that revolve around traditional stability and future building. Quote, with political shifts, climate change, the pandemic, and a war in Ukraine, there's so much changing and uncertainty in our future. Stability and future building are more in question today. So she also noted that Gen Z and younger millennials are more likely to experience mental health issues, including anxiety, depression, and other factors which put a damper on things like dating or let alone just physical intimacy. The isolation of the pandemic may seem like an obvious scapegoat for these problems, but experts were noticing these trends before COVID-19 was even a thing. Now, while the wide array of dating apps would appear to help younger adults find, basically, hopefully, true love or whatever, the endless possibilities of swiping right have made it more difficult for younger adults to settle down. The doctor also said that the convenience of dating apps has led people to see one another as disposable. The plethora of choices and ease of finding dates has led people to have a, quote, on to the next one, end quote, mentality, which is making dating more superficial. In other words, dating apps have made matchmaking easier, but keeping basically a partner is less likely, meaning we are going to hook up, connect, you know, go out on a couple of dates, and if it's not 100% perfect, you move on or I move on or whatever it is, and that is becoming a common theme as opposed to just really trying to hammer these things out. Quote, finally, the doctor, that mentality around dating can make it harder to do the hard work of working on a relationship, which is 100% true. And I think back to like when I was, let's say, you know, a teenager and obviously, you know, interested in girls and all that kind of stuff and started dating and everything like that. You know, I can remember back, you know, really to like my first girlfriend. I had to meet her father. I had to go through that gauntlet, you know, and those were things that helped me develop social skills. They helped me develop interaction skills. And I think one of those things that, you know, the New York Post really wasn't hitting on is that I think as we are looking at social interaction, it's a huge problem because there are a lot of people that just do not know how to interact with others. They do not have that practice. And if we are all, like, say, remote, sitting from home, and we're working from home, it's very hard to have those interactions, whether it's just, talking at the water cooler or actually going out on dates. And that is a serious, serious problem that we are going to have. Not to mention, I've heard of cases where people are like, oh, yes, I've been in a serious relationship for 3 years, and they've never actually met the person because it's been 100% online. And that is not just COVID. That was happening before COVID as well. So this is a huge problem. We're going to see where this goes. But I think overall and in the long run, we've got to shape up on this. And I really think we have to encourage, especially younger adults, to go out and learn those social skills, to go out and feel the awkwardness and learn, you know, how to, you know, attract a mate properly, work on a relationship as opposed to just hit and run absolutely everything. So there you go. Those are my thoughts on that. That is your dating and romance news of the week. And before we head over to the next segment, I wanted to let you know, and I've done this in a couple of shows, and I keep being reminded to do this, and I always forget. Basically, if you didn't know, I put out content on a daily basis, not just here on the radio where you're listening to me, but actually I put it quite a lot of places, daily podcasts and videos on some of the latest trends, technology, cybersecurity, privacy,
all these kinds of things I keep day to day. And some of the segments that I do for my news section or even my Breaches of the Week every Sunday gets translated into the show. But I do this as essentially a labor of love. You know, I don't have any kind of monetization anywhere. I just do it to keep people informed and to keep everybody interested. But you can find me basically on Twitter or Facebook at @NickAESP or on LinkedIn and YouTube at @NickEspinoza. And please follow me. I'd love to basically get a shout out from you and you know, send me a message or whatever it is. But I do content daily and I hope you guys enjoy it. And so that is my quick blurb.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at @NickAESP. Again, that's @NickAESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And as always, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me a ton of this information, and that would be Barrett Peterson, Chris Fowlon, Jay Danz, and Jacqueline Wolf. Guys, thank you very much. And if you have basically a topic for me or a breach for me, please let me know, and I'll give you a shout out here and also on my nationally syndicated radio show. And let's get started, because this week in data breaches was absolutely off the rails. And let's start with CVS, the large pharmacy, because more than 1 billion search records belonging to CVS Health were accidentally posted online and accessible to the public earlier this year. Now, the database was approximately 204 gigabytes and totaled 1.1 billion records. They had no form of authentication in place to prevent unauthorized entry, meaning if you knew where to go, you or I could have read that as well. Now, the data exposed online included customer email addresses, user IDs, customer searches on CVS pharmacy websites for COVID-19 vaccines and other medications, according to the report. So if you basically went searching around for a vaccine or something else on their website, looks like you might have been exposed.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.